Welcome back, everyone, to the latest episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host. And this week, we have a sponsor. Wonder Capital is sponsoring a podcast again. Wonder, the easiest way to invest in large-scale solar energy project across the U.S. With Wonder, you can help finance renewable energy projects who are holding up to 7.5% return annually. To learn more, visit wondercapital.com/electric. So I'm joined, as usual, by Seth Wintraub, but Seth is down in Florida this week. How are you doing, Seth?
Good. It's nice and warm down here.
Yeah, I bet. And how did your trip down go with the Mole Axe?
It was actually very uneventful. We decided to just drive through the night. We stopped at every supercharger we needed to. There's quite a bit more. We went on a long trip a few years ago to Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the Model S at the time. And we had to stop at basically every supercharger because there weren't that many at that point, and they were kind of far apart. This time, we were like, "Yeah, let's see how we're doing." Whenever it's starting to feel more like a gas station situation, because down the East Coast corridor, there's like superchargers every few exits. So at least in certain parts, like New Jersey between New York and Philadelphia, there's like one every two or three exits. So it was more casual. We were like, let's see how we do. If we want to drive fast, we can get behind a fast truck or something and just kind of draft off of that. We can go 85 or, maybe we'll go 60, depending on the traffic situation. And it wasn't such a, we have to stop at this one supercharger.
Yeah. No,
if we don't make it there, we're screwed. It was more like, let's just see how it goes. And then as the mileage, as the range goes down, then you start to make the plan of which supercharger to hit. And plus the navigation system now has a better way of calculating superchargers. I didn't get the big update yet or the subsequent update. I'm still waiting for any kind of update. But
well, you're talking about the Autopilot update that came out a few weeks ago, the new one is coming out this weekend. It hasn't come out yet. We have a preview on Electric right now for the navigation system. But like you said, there was already improvement into, you're talking about superchargers as waypoint when you do a trip. Is that
right? So you can just map all the way to Florida, and it tells you where you think you're gonna it thinks you need to stop. And if you drive better than it anticipates, then you can it'll actually change superchargers mid-run.
Yeah, that's already working pretty well too. And you can cancel a specific charge point, and then because they try to optimize your wait time at the supercharger too. So they want you to get at the supercharger as low as possible for your state of charge of the battery in order to have a higher charge rate, and then you can leave quicker. But what's going to change with the new navigation system is that apparently Tesla is going to be able to calculate the arrival point better. So by calculating the arrival point better, they should also have an impact on your state of charge at arrival, which ultimately also changes the fact that you're going to be able to plan for your charging a little bit better. So that's coming out this weekend, but as usual, it's batches. So you can be waiting weeks, like in the case of Seth for the last update. And speaking of Tesla this week, we're going to start with the fact that Tesla had a rough week on the stock market. Well, the old stock market had a rough week, always a rough start to the week, but Tesla was particularly affected for a few different reasons that sort of piled up over the week, starting with the fact that I think that had the biggest impact first. It was the investigation by the NTSB, the Federal Transport Authorities, into the crash that happened a week ago in Mountain View, where a Model X ended up having a front collision with a median barrier on the highway, and the driver unfortunately died of his injuries at the hospital after, and the vehicle caught on fire at some point in the accident. There's a few different reports on when the car caught on fire exactly. Apparently, the fire is not the cause of the death. It's not what led to that. Like, it was extracted from the Model X before the car was completely on fire, or at least the fire penetrated the passenger cabin, which is when it starts to get dangerous for any passenger in the car.
Yeah, and you made a good point, I think, when we were talking about it earlier, that the state of the car in all the pictures is after the firemen or whoever arrived on the scene and probably cut the car in half, basically, to get the guy out. I know, I think Tesla said that they hadn't seen a Model X wreck that bad. And, you know, I hadn't, certainly. And, obviously, condolences to that guy's family, but it probably wasn't as bad. I mean, who knows, like, what it looked like, but what everybody saw and what all the pictures show is the vehicle after the fire, and after basically the fire people cut the thing in half, which is, you know, a big consideration.
There was a few interesting about that crash in particular. Of course, now there's an investigation on it. But first of all, is of course, as always, if a Tesla vehicle is involved in a crash, then it becomes a news story, because we wouldn't be talking about it if any other car, if it was a Mercedes, a GLC that was involved in that crash, no one would talk about it. So whether that's good for the victim or not, I'm not sure. But so let's get out all of the way to start with. Like, we're talking about it now because it is a news story, unfortunately, and a national news story even. But since then, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people that die around the world on the roads. And there were thousands of fires, car fire in the U.S. alone. So it's nothing special to Tesla here. But now it's an investigation, and that's why it's interesting. So the National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the crash. But it's not necessarily investing Tesla here. So there was the autopilot component, but there's already another ongoing investigation on the autopilot with the crash, not a fatal one, but a crash in Southern California, where a Model S, supposedly on the autopilot, according to the driver, ran into the back of a fire truck. So that's already currently under investigation, and that's specifically on the role of autopilot in that crash. Here, Tesla didn't know if the car was on autopilot. The NTSB doesn't know yet. But there's other aspects of the crash that could be investigated too. So, of course, there was the fire. There was the extraction of the battery pack after. So Tesla ended up sending engineers on the spot to help with the extraction of the battery pack. And then there's the third aspect to it that is being investigated right now, which is the potential role of the fact that the crash barrier on the median was already destroyed a few weeks back by another crash that someone already that wasn't in a Tesla, that wasn't on the autopilot and everything, and they ended up crashing on that barrier. That didn't make the news, though. But the driver survived, and he actually told a news outlet in the Bay Area that he attributed staying alive because of that barrier. So normally that barrier it absorbs a lot of the energy of the impact. And they never ended up.
He was in a Prius.
Yeah, he was in a Prius too. So it's a lot lighter car. And they never ended up rebuilding that barrier. So you were a lot closer to the concrete part of the median instead of the shock absorbing barrier.
Yeah, I hope that's a result of the investigation, is that, hey, when those barriers get destroyed, there should be a new barrier up within hours, not like weeks.
That's the ideal solution, sure. But even if that's not possible for some reason, because of course it's a construction project, always extremely difficult and everything, but there has to be a better way to handle like where that barrier was, because all they did was like put another form of a sign with the yellow and black lines on it on the concrete itself, but that does almost nothing to prevent. It's visible, but other than that, does nothing to prevent any accidents. So that's unfortunate. Tesla ended up issuing a response to the investigate, well, the accident itself and the media response and the investigation. And that's one of the things that they mentioned as a potential reason for the, well, not the accident itself, but the result of the accident, which was a very grave impact on the Model X and the death of the driver. So maybe the accident would have happened anyway with the crash barrier, but maybe would have been less intense and less severe on the car, and the driver would have then survived. So we don't know. It's speculation at this point. The and it has NTSB investigated a Tesla crash before the other fatal crash on autopilot, which happened in Florida three years back, and that took about a year and a half to get the result from that report. And what it ended up saying is that the autopilot wasn't necessarily at fault, meaning that it performed as expected as a level 2 driving assist system. But they also said that it might have contributed to the crash because of potentially the driver not paying attention because it was on autopilot, which is...
Yeah, I mean, like, level 2 means you're paying attention. So any accident is like... it's on you. Like, we're not giving responsibility to the car at all yet.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I still come up with a lot of user when the last update came up, and some were concerned, like, it's starting to get so good with the Autopilot 2.0 that you start to trust it more and more, and you're more inclined to start paying less attention to the road. And of course, there's an awkward like transitional period between level 2 and level 3. Level 3 you should pay attention to, actually. So it's more, level 3 is the awkward transitional period between level 2 and level 4, actually. So where you have to handle that that period where the actual driver in the driver's seat is the backup system to the driver assist system or the actual autonomous driving system at that point. So that period, like, so at the end of the day, what should be clear out of it is that you should always pay attention. That's it. There's no, until Tesla can clearly advertise that they have a fully self-driving system, which they actually sell. So that's what's confusing a lot of people, since it's a package that they actually sell, but it's not yet available. As soon as they don't advertise that, always pay attention on the road, and you will be safe. Because we've never heard of any accident where the autopilot actually, like, swerve you outside of the way. We heard of things like ping-ponging and coming close to the line and people just really, but never something like really as severe as what we were seeing in that accident, which if the autopilot was the cause of it, it would have to have, like, there was a good, like, maybe 4 or 5 feet between that barrier and the actual lane. So the autopilot would have to swerve off that lane.
I saw some people speculating that it actually thought it was in a lane, like the shoulder seemed like a lane because there's like a white line on two sides. So I think maybe the guy was like, he flipped his turn signal. I mean, I'm totally speculating. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's another thing. But you would have to have initiated another lane change.
Right.
The driver has to initiate.
Maybe he initiated a change and it put him into the shoulder lane, which was where he, you know, met his demise. But, like, we have no idea. Like, it could be anything.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, because it was such a serious, significant wreck. Tesla doesn't, I don't know if they're going to be able to recover any of the logs, though.
Yeah. Well, there was a module that was recovered after the crash. But I'm not sure if it's one that has the autopilot logs in them. We'll have to see. If Tesla doesn't recover them right away, I don't think there's a lot of chances for them to ever recover them. But we'll see. Anyway, that was one of the bad news that Tesla did. Well, the crash was last week or the week before that even. Yeah, it was the Friday before that. But this week was the report that the NTSB was talking.
NTSB, right.
Was starting the investigation. Then at the same time, there was other things that came up. The NVIDIA stuff, like, some people linked it to Tesla, which is kind of a stretch in my opinion, but I'm going to tell you about it anyway. So NVIDIA in the verge of they have like their annual big conference in San Jose where they unveil all their new chips and AI stuff and everything. And on the sideline of that conference, they confirmed that they were suspending their testing on their self-driving cars in response to the Uber accident a few weeks back, where the fatal accident with the pedestrian in Arizona. I think we talked about it on the show. I'm not sure if we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was in response to that, just because I think Uber has a few chips, NVIDIA chips in them, but I'm not even sure it's the one that they use for the self-driving program. And so it seemed more like a PR thing. Like we are aware that there's dangers with self-driving cars, and we are putting our testing until we find out what was the actual problem with the specific Uber accident.
And I think because there's a connection, like, you know, investors don't know all the back end stuff, but I think NVIDIA and Tesla, or NVIDIA kind of connected the dots between Tesla and the Uber accident. So,
you're right. So there's a link between NVIDIA and Uber, which is already vague, the link there. Then there's a clear link between NVIDIA and Tesla because of the chips that Tesla use. Tesla use NVIDIA chip on the autopilot board. So you're saying that because of those two links, like the
right altogether. So investors were like, oh man, like, you know, Tesla's basically Uber at this point, and they can't make autonomous cars.
Yeah.
And that's clearly not true. But even if it were true, my kind of worldview on this is Tesla's not an autonomous car company. They're building autonomous cars because that's what everybody's doing, but the reason Tesla is Tesla is because they're electric cars, obviously, and they're not just electric cars, but it's the whole electric ecosystem. So even if Teslas didn't have autonomy, and you know they don't have autonomy now, but even if they're late on autonomy or they have to use Google for autonomy, they're still making cars that nobody else can make. And they still have an ecosystem of the solar and the battery and the supercharger network and the technology, you know, their center stack and all these other things. I'm not worried from an investment standpoint. I'm not worried about, are they going to be the first company to do autonomous? You know, if they're behind Waymo, if they have to use Waymo, if they have to scrap their whole thing and they just throw Google in there, I don't think that's a big deal for Tesla. I mean, there's going to be a lot of, the Tesla network and stuff that kind of rely on the autonomy. But I think, you know, Tesla will get there. And I'm not too worried about that as an investment idea. And I probably should note, we're going to note it on the website. The stock went way down this week. And I don't like to invest in Tesla because of the website, but it seemed too good to be true. At 260, so I got in at I think a little below 260. So I'm in Tesla. It'll be noted on the site, and we're gonna try not to be Tesla positive for a couple weeks until it gets back up to 300.
Yeah, right. But I have to disagree a little bit on that because I think the autopilot program is very central to Tesla's future, I think, more than you think, in my opinion. But I see where you're coming from, because there's such a big difference between the autopilot program and what Waymo is doing. And we're going to talk about Waymo in a second, because they also had a big announcement this week. So we're going to go on that. But just because we were on NVIDIA, I want to mention the... We had an exclusive first look at the Tesla Autopilot 2.5 onboard computer. So that was the first time that we got access to that. And you can look on the site in the description below. We have a link to the first image of that custom-made computer for the Autopilot 2.5. So we know that Tesla first introduced Autopilot 2.0 in October 2016. That was supposed to be the computer that enables fully self-driving capacity. But at the time, Tesla also said that they might need to upgrade the computer at some point, which they said it would offer for free a retrofit to the owners. And the first update that we saw of that was in August 2017, the Autopilot 2.5, which brought a new computer inside all the Model S and X. And Model 3, actually, so it was a very similar board as the Model 3. And now on the side, I have a Crisis Porter about the boards of each of those. So the 2.5 board inside the Model S and X and the 2.5 board inside the Model 3. And the main difference is, as we already reported, was a second, a redundant NVIDIA GPU on the board. So more computer power and also like a safety net, a redundant safety net for the for the computer inside the Autopilot program. Also, you see all the connections for all the different sensors. That's where there's a difference between the Model S and X board and the Model 3. For example, the selfie camera. That's all Tesla calls it, the selfie camera. That's not my words. So the onboard driver facing camera just under the mirror, that's on it. But other than that, it's very similar board. And the bigger difference is with the MCU board in the Model 3 that was different in the Model X and X. But that's all was also updated, as we reported last week. All new Model S and X vehicles have a new MCU too. But now going back to the self-driving news this week, the Waymo, there was a big announcement because Waymo, in partnership with Jaguar, unveiled a new self-driving and all-electric Hi-Pace. So it's basically the same Hi-Pace that was unveiled last month, just before the Geneva Auto Show, the production Hi-Pace, which is coming out later this year, but with the Waymo self-driving technology. So it's equipped with all the same sensors that we already seen on the Chrysler Pacifica that was the main car that Waymo was using. And now it's on a non-electric Hi-Pace instead, which is pretty cool. And it's the same idea behind what you're already using in Chrysler Pacifica. Is just that instead of it's powering the ride-hailing service that they want to do with autonomous ride-hailing service that they want to do. But instead of getting inside a van, you would get into a Jaguar I-Pace, which is a more premium vehicle. And so it's a little bit it's comparable to like ordering a Uber X instead of a Uber Select, for example. Like they're both like the driver. You have a driver, which is Waymo's technology, but you choose a different car. You choose a van instead of Waymo. And that's where I was linking it back to the difference between Tesla's Autopilot effort, self-driving effort, versus Waymo, is that Waymo is clearly still focused just on offering a ride-hailing service. Tesla is very focused on selling cars. That's their business. They sell cars to customers that you own. And if you do that, you just can't have like what you see on Waymo, which is the big LiDAR sensor on top, and that looks like a big nipple on top of the car. And on the sides too, you have like big extrusion for the sensor and everything. It just doesn't look good. It looks something that I would be perfectly fine spending money to travel from point A to point B, but I wouldn't pay money to own that car, which is what Tesla is going for, I think.
Why do you think Waymo chooses electric vehicles rather than just picking, you know, like Apple is using Nexus or Lexus, I think. And, Google seems to only go after electric cars. Even the Chrysler Pacifica is...
I think the big difference is that Apple is very much into just testing right now. So what we're seeing with the Pacifica and now with the I-Pace are actual production cars. Like that's what they want to... That's what's going to give you the service. Like Waymo is talking about launching the ride-hailing service commercially, publicly, or open to the public by this end of the year. Yeah. That's another thing that's different between the Autopilot program and Waymo, is that it's geo-fenced. They can only open it in a specific area that they already have mapped and they have a lot of data on, and so they're geo-fencing the service in a specific area. So the difference between that and Autopilot is Autopilot, they are aiming really with AI focused system that can just handle anything that you throw at it,
which is weird because Google's a very AI driven company.
Yeah, they're an AI-driven company, but they are big on simulation for their program. Well, Tesla also has an autopilot simulation engine that's apparently like a video game. But in the case of Waymo, they're really focused on geofencing. So that service is going to launch in Phoenix, and they're going to have those production cars. And I think they're just aware of that the future is electric, and they want their production car to already be electric. And of course, the Pacifica made a lot of sense because if you're doing like a ride-hailing service that you want to pack as many people in the car as possible to get even more efficiency out of, because if you go electric and if you go self-driving, you just decrease the cost per mile significantly. Then the only other thing that you can do at that point is just add more people inside that car, and a van is perfect for that. But I think they want to go with more premium service too, because at first it's going to be more expensive, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry about that, folks. Seth has like we said, he's in Florida right now. He's not at his house, and there's a dog in the house. But yes, I'm going to continue talking about the Waymo situation, which is that those cars are really the production vehicle that we're going to see being launched later this year. So that iPad that you see, they're going to have inside a fleet in Phoenix, and you're going to be able to take an app with the Waymo name on it and order the car to come pick you up, just like a Uber. But there's not going to be anyone in the driver's seat, which is the idea behind Waymo. And eventually they want to grow. We're just talking about the iPace here, not even the Pacifica, which also have thousands of orders right now just for Waymo. They were talking about 20,000 units, which was actually surprising. I don't know about you, Seth, but because the iPace, I don't think we were expecting big volume for the iPace, regardless of self-driving.
That's like, what, 5 years worth of cars?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably...
At least a year.
It's probably a year full. So they're talking 20,000 over a few years. So it might be as much like as 20% of their capacity over the next 5 years or something like that, or in 4 years or something like that.
Yeah, and like that's a huge win for Jaguar, because basically they're like subsidizing their first run of cars, which is.
And you know what Waymo did for sure? They had to have tried a bunch of different cars and decided to go with the iPace. But like, so they could have done that partnership with Tesla maybe or something. But what I think made the difference is probably Tesla doesn't really need the orders, like for at least for Model S and X, like 20,000 orders. It doesn't make a big a difference for them. And on Waymo's side, it's a competitive, like Jaguar didn't have a big self-driving program.
Jaguar actually needs Waymo. Like they probably use their maps.
So Tesla probably wasn't as open as Jaguar for a partnership like that.
I mean, I guess that's why FCA also has the Chrysler Pacifica is there. Same reason.
Yeah. Well, FCA is never really technology forward anyway. They're always late to the game. But people in the comments are asking you to show the dog. Like, you don't want it to start barking again.
Yeah, I shot him. The dog's gone. No worries.
Moving on to if we can come back to the Tesla stock. So the other thing that affected. So we think that actually Waymo actually had an impact too on the stock this week, because that was a big news that Waymo is still looking forward to launching their service this year, and now there's a big partnership with Jaguar I-Pace, which is seen as a competitor to the Model X, even though as we previously reported, it's more closer to the Model Y, which is coming next year probably. But that had just a broader impact maybe on the Tesla network, which should be specifically the competitor to Waymo. Though we haven't heard much about Tesla network for a while now, since it's very reliant on Tesla's ability to deliver a self-driving system. And it hasn't happened yet. The last thing that had an impact on the stock was the prospect of Tesla hitting Model 3 production, which is, of course, the thing that has the most effect on Tesla stock. And I ended up on the Cheddar. How do you say it?
Cheddar.
This week was like the new young and hip CNBC competitor. To talk about Tesla stock and the impact on the Model 3 production. Because a bunch of people, when the stock started dropping on Monday and Tuesday, started calling, of course, the end of Tesla. Tesla's going bankrupt and everything. So they invited me on the show to give like sort of a counter argument to it. Because the Tesla is not going bankrupt. People, they had their bonds downgraded though, and their bonds are just are not very attractive right now. Which is not the first time that happened anyway. But what I think is, if Tesla doesn't end up hitting the Model 3 production target this quarter, which I think is likely, that's not even the point, actually, because I think even if they miss it by a few hundred units per week, so if they reach, let's say, 2,000 units per week, I think that's going to be good too. The point that's going to be difficult is if they end up pushing the 5,000 units a week, which is, I think, the point that they need to hit to have a positive gross margin on the car. And if they hit a positive gross margin on the car, then the need for new capital to be invested in is not as big of an issue. But if the bonds are not really attractive right now, and they don't hit the production target, then the only solution for more capital injection is going to be going to the market for with some dilution for the shareholders, which is bad for the shareholders, of course. But where I try to have a counter argument against all the people crying that Tesla is going bankrupt is the fact that has Elon Musk ever had any problem raising capital in the last decade or so? Like ever since 2008, 2009, with the issue with the whole market and everything. Since then, Elon Musk has never had any problem raising capital. And even though the global economy now is heading toward maybe a little recession, it's not as dire as it was in 2008, nothing close. I think Elon Musk is going to have no problem. And he's in a much better position to be able to raise capital just from a credibility standpoint. Even though, of course, Elon Musk always doesn't hit its targets and everything in terms of timelines, but he's still incredibly credible when it comes to a handful of Wall Street people that have a shit ton of money.
Yeah, and so additionally, problems with Model 3. Demand is not a problem. Like, that would be a problem. Like, the demand for the Chevy Bolt, for instance, you know, it's good. It's not great. If you want to buy a Model 3 right now, you'd be lucky to get one by 2020. Like, and that's, you know, that's partially due to the slow ramp up, but it's also due to the 400,000 people still want a Model 3.
Closer to 500,000 at this point.
What's that?
Closer to 500,000 at this point.
Yeah, 500,000. So Tesla does not have a demand problem, which, like, frankly, that's like, you know, a lot of people, a lot of companies have that problem. So all they have to do, and I say this like somebody who has no idea how hard this is ramp up to 5,000 where they supposedly break even and then beyond. And it's just interesting to me that like the world's going to end if they don't hit, you know, 2,500 this quarter and 5,000 next quarter. Like theoretically, if they hit 2,000 and they get to 4,000 next quarter and 6,000 the quarter after that, I mean, like, is Tesla going to be over at that point? No. And are people not going to want their cars anymore? No. Like, it's just not that big of a deal.
It's not that big of a deal. The only thing is that if they don't hit it, if they end up pushing, if they don't hit it like this month, it's not that big an issue. The other thing that we're going to report about is the Bloomberg email leak for the production capacity that said that last week they were at 200 a day, and they were pushing for 300 a day by the end of the month. So they had like just over a week to get from 200 to 300, which sounds very difficult. But the way that it worked for a minute is that it can be done if they just push for it. So
right. So that would be 1,400 a week to 2,100 a week.
Yeah. So just over 2,000, which wouldn't be that bad, but it would be a miss. But like I said, the most important target is the 5,000 a week, because that's the gross margin, the positive gross margin break-even point. Now, if they end up pushing that goal, a capital raise is probably going to be needed. That's the only thing. So of course that's bad for the shareholder because it's dilution, but just how big of a capital raise is going to be. And that's the point that I made in the Shadar interview on Wednesday. Historically, if you look at how Tesla ends up raising capital, they are not big on going to market with just the idea of we screwed up, we need more money to accomplish our current goals. They don't do that. Like, that's not Elon Musk's way to go to market. They go to market with, we have this cool new thing that we need to pay for in order to bring to market. And by the way, we're going to use some of that capital to just our general operation with our current vehicle programs, like the Model 3 that we're trying to get to as many customers' hands as possible. So I wouldn't be surprised that if Tesla goes to market in the next 3 to 6 months, it's going to be on the back of another announcement. That announcement, in my opinion, should be the Model Y, which is a hard sell to bring to people with an announcement if the Model 3 is not going well in terms of production. But if they can really sell the 2,000 to 300, let's say they hit between 2,000 and 3,000 units per week by that time, then it's starting to look good. Like over 2,000 units is more than the Model S and Model X combined. So it's starting to be some significant volume there. So I don't think that's an impossible scenario here.
Yeah. All this together, like every single problem that Tesla's having is easily surmountable. None of this seems like the end of the company. And like when you look at the company a month ago or whatever, when it was selling at 350, nothing has changed if you look at the company today so significantly that it warrants a drop in price of $100. So it's kind of it's a head scratcher for me. I wonder if all the news coming out, all the bad investment analysis and the New York Times article and all this stuff, it feels to me like one of those things where everybody's ganging up on this, this news vortex thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It really was that. Like, it's hard to point exactly what happened because, the news just kept piling up all week, or at least the first half of the week, and it kept adding up just up to yesterday with the recall. So we haven't talked about that yet, but it was the recall that happened for the Model S, all Model S pre April 2016, which adds up to 123,000 vehicles, and of course all of the headlines were, this is the biggest recall in history this week. The 100,000 Model S and Tesla recalls all Model S because of a power steering problem.
Hey, Fred, your mic is doing that scratchy thing again. Maybe check your connections.
Oh, okay. Let me check it.
Yeah, it's just weird that they all seem to be coming at once. And, the New York Times article today or last night, I can't remember the analyst that was like, there's no way that Tesla can ever, if you run the financials, they'll never recover from this. And it's just like, it seems very like straightforward and easy, not easy, but like straightforward how Tesla gets to 5,000 and then profitability. And then, it's got a lot of different avenues to success.
All right. Is it okay right now?
Yeah, your mic sounds good. We're at a good break, so I'll read our sponsor. WonderCapital.com/electric is where you go to find the best way to invest in solar. Typically the best way to have solar is to put it on your roof, but that doesn't work for everyone for whatever reason. Maybe you got a big tree from your neighbor blocking your roof or whatever, but, investing in solar, you can, with Wonder, it's putting solar somewhere else and you're getting the benefits, which are 7.5%, reach up to 7.5% returns. Small and mid-sized businesses need capital and assistance with solar, and Wonder is supporting them and offering great returns for investors and contributing positively to helping the U.S. catch up in the solar and fight climate change. Individuals have already financed more than 175 large-scale solar projects. These solar energy projects create enough electricity to power the equivalent of 5,000 homes, which help offset almost 75 million pounds of carbon dioxide emissions each year. In 2017, Wonder financed over 37 megawatts of solar through more than 115 large-scale projects, which in the first year alone will help offset, for example, 36 million pounds of coal burned or 3.7 million gallons of gasoline consumed. For greenhouse gas emissions, that amounts to 23.2 million pounds of waste, or in the first year alone, 39,000 acres of U.S. forest in 1 year, or 7,100 cars driven. So Wonder is great. Here's why. Even if you have solar in your house, like I do, you've already built out solar and you want to invest more in solar and get a good return, which is up to 7.5%. Wonder allows you to do that. And if you want to try that, wondercapital.com/electric.
Yeah, Wonder is great. And if you help them, you help us too at the same time, which is awesome. And you help yourself if you can get some decent returns. So
yeah, I mean, the market's a little crazy right now. So
yeah, it's also a way to get away from the stock market instead and invest in something that has generally been just being very consistent in terms of returns, solar energy. And of course, the best way to invest in it is always on your own home. But if you can, that's another solution. And sometimes, like, they invest in bigger project too, instead of just a rooftop project. Well, a house rooftop project, commercial solar can be sometimes more profitable and anything like that. So it's really something to look into, especially if you are an accredited investor. You can directly invest. If not, you can put yourself in the waiting list, and they're gonna have soon products for people who are not only accredited investor. Coming back at what I was saying about the recall, though, on the Model S.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, so the headlines were very scary for a lot of people, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of bolts on the component made by Bosch that can have issues. And it's a problem that was known for a while because, like I said, it's a Bosch component that they sell also to other companies. So it's on other cars. So other cars have the same issues and everything. And so Tesla was just looking into how to best handle changing those parts, because it was really just a problem for people in colder regions where they can be salts on the roads and they can be more corrosion on those bolts that ends up creating that issues where the bolt can fail, and that can affect the power steering of your car. So you can easily make it sound scary, but at the end of the day, it's not scary at all. Like, worst case scenario, you're like, if you're on the highway and that fails, like, you don't really need that power steering that much anyway. If you're on the highway, if you're going at high speed, so power steering is more an issue. Like if you're in a sharp turn and things like that. But Tesla did the right thing. They're gonna change every car on it. And so going back as how it affects Tesla on the stock market this week, which was what we were talking about. Not a big deal, because Bosch will end up covering the cost of the bolts, which I don't think is a big deal anyway. But
a convenient name is the Chevy Bolt.
Yeah, actually. Can have some confusion there. Yeah. But the biggest cost is probably the service cost, but it's less than an hour per car. It adds up because there are 123,000 of them. But Tesla thinks it's going to be material to their costs, which probably have a better idea than we do. Moving on, what haven't we talked about yet? Tesla launched an automotive training program. That was cool this week. So I had a talk about, I had a talk with the person in charge of that at the first school where Tesla launched a program, which is a school in North Carolina, Charlotte, I think. What is it called? It's called the Central PMO Community College in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a 12-week program for Tesla to train new technicians, service technicians. So right now, Tesla's main source of recruiting for technician has been just from other dealerships and people that were working on cars, mainly cars with internal combustion engines, and people also coming out of training schools, but also with a focus on internal combustion engines. And they had to train those people internally to make them up to date with Tesla's vehicles. So that was a big burden on Tesla, having to train all that staff, and they were growing so fast in terms of service centers. So it was becoming an issue. So they pretty much outsourced and that to community colleges right now. Of course, they are very much involved in those programs at those schools too. But it's a way to branch out and have some satellite schools, if you will, train the new employees specifically for those cars. And coming out of those programs, you can Tesla said you can pretty much come out of those programs without any debt. So you get paid throughout the program as you learn, and you end up if you complete the program with all the requirements, which is have to do with attending and your scores in every classes, you end up with a job proposal. Of course, you need to be open to move, since right now there's only the school in North Carolina and one in near Los Angeles that have the program. And of course, they need people all over the U.S. and North America. But they're going to help you move, and you're going to get a job as a technician in a Tesla service center.
And it seems like a pretty good proposition.
Yeah, it's a good provision for the students. It's the requirement on their website. You can go to tesla.com/career/start. The program is called Tesla Start, and they have all the requirement, which is not exactly that difficult. They're talking about a high school diploma or a GED, some 3.5 grade point, a valid driver's license too. Like I said, be able to relocate in terms of physical ability. They do ask for you to be able to lift 50 to 60 pounds, which shouldn't be that big of an issue for most people. And if you're all able to do that and you're able to get to the program and maintain 95% attendance, and of course pass all the classes, you can end up being a Tesla technician from those schools. And Tesla gets a growing a new way to recruit technicians.
Yeah, and 3-month program, that doesn't seem too crazy, you know, to up and leave and go to North Carolina, you know, for like a year or something. That'd be kind of rough, but 3 months doesn't seem too bad.
Yeah, it's a pretty good proposition. I'm moving on. Yeah, we talked a little bit about the Model 3 production, how it's coming. The big thing this week was, of course, Tesla still registered new VINs with NACHTA this week. A record month for sure. They were close to 10,000 new Model 3 registered with the federal authorities. That doesn't mean that they're going to have produced by the end of the month 10,000 units. But the rate per week is close to 2,000 units. So Tesla could be finishing the month at a production rate very close to 2,000 units. Like we said, Bloomberg reported from internal emails that said they were just over 200 units per week, and they were pushing for 200 per day, and they were pushing for 300 per day by the end of the month. So not impossible.
That email kind of felt like an email that Tesla wanted to leak.
Yeah.
Kind of giving people a heads up of what to expect, which may sort of have contributed to the stock going down, although I don't think so.
No, I think it was the other way around.
Yeah.
Like by that time that the email leaked, it helped.
Right. I agree. I think
the stock had dropped, and that
email. I mean, it didn't send it up too much.
No.
But at least it set expectations. I think people had already expected Tesla to miss 2,500. I think this email that leaked with quotation marks was kind of like, this is where we expect to be. You know, we expect to be at 2,100 at the end of the month. And, you know, that's kind of sets the expectations without officially revealing any numbers.
Yeah. And all those new Model 3 VINs that were registered also came at the same time that Tesla sent a huge batch of invitations in Canada, something that I think it had to be the biggest batch yet, because not just in Canada, but period, but that particular batch was for Canadians and reservation holders, because I got so much tips about people getting their VINs. And I know that we have a pretty big following in Canada too, so that makes sense also.
Maybe every single Tesla owner or soon-to-be Tesla owner in Canada contacted you.
Yeah, well, even if that's the case, it's still like close to 100 of people that got the invite, but that's impossible, of course. So I'm pretty sure it's a lot bigger than that, the batch, I mean. But yeah, I got a ton of advice. So sorry if I didn't respond to every one of them, because it was just overwhelming. I was keep getting emails about it, and Twitter messages and stuff like that. But yeah, a ton of people got the invite in Canada. So that's people that waited in line, or even some people that just ordered online the same day or the next day, maybe even the next day. Yeah. But so a lot of people did the same thing that I did, like I got my invite a week ago, are waiting for the all-wheel drive. Others are waiting also for the standard battery pack. But a lot of people are ordering too. And of course, it raised a question, since it was such a big, quite apparently a big batch. Is Tesla going to focus for a while? Because those cars are not going to be delivered for the next 4 to 8 weeks. Maybe in 4 to 8 weeks, Tesla going to start looking to focus more on Canadian deliveries in order to wait for the to not achieve the 200,000 delivery threshold for the federal tax credit.
See, so, I believe that. I think Tesla's going to game that pretty
but
hard.
But if they game that, then that's mean that they think they're going to hit the mark in the second quarter, and they're going to push it to the third quarter, to the very beginning of the third quarter. So if those deliveries start 4 to 8 weeks from now, so that means that they might be like a whole month of an awkward month of having no delivery or pretty much no delivery in the U.S.
Well, they just slow it down, right? I mean, yeah. Production doesn't matter, because it can, you know, a lot of production can go to Canada, but I guess it's deliveries, right, that the U.S. counts.
Yeah, it's deliveries. Yeah.
So if they can keep their deliveries under 200,000 until, what, June 30th or July 1st, then they extend their $7,500 tax credit forward a quarter.
Yeah, for the full quarter instead of just having a few weeks. I think it's a real possibility. But we're going to have a better idea in the next month or two, I think, because we're going to see it with the rate at which people are receiving order in the U.S. versus Canada. It seemed like a bit different this week alone, but like I said, it doesn't make sense in terms of the timing of the delivery yet. So it might be like our first indication of it, but it's not the concrete proof yet. But we're going to keep an eye on that, because that's an interesting point and something that a lot of reservation holders in the U.S. are keeping a close eye to, because it can make a big difference on their purchase. Now we could finish up with SF Motors, maybe. I think that was an interesting news this
week. Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. So we've been reporting on SF Motors for a while now, which is a new division of SoCon, which is a Chinese company, better known for their commercial vehicle, and they do also some motorcycles and stuff like that. Pretty big company in China, but they launched a new subsidiary called SF Motors, and it's more of a global company than just a Chinese company alone. It's a Chinese owned, of course, but they have a big presence in Silicon Valley, also in Michigan. I think, yeah, they have a few set in Michigan. And the big news that we reported last year was that they purchased the former plant, the factories that were making the Hummers and a few other Mercedes SUV too. They were doing in Indiana, so it's a big assembly plant in Indiana. They ended up purchasing that, and just a few months later, they also purchased the electric powertrain startup founded by Martin Eberhard, who's of course best known as the original Tesla co-founder. And an electrical engineer who has been working on and off in the EV space since quitting Tesla back in 2009. Well, quitting Tesla, being pushed out of Tesla by Elon Musk and shareholders. And since then, he's been working like with Volkswagen for a while. He ended up at Lucid Motors when it was still known as Ativia. And 2 years ago, he started Hinvit, which was his own startup, developing new electric powertrains. So we're talking about battery pack and drive units and everything. And they were it was in partnership with an engineer in Germany. So they were based in Germany and in the U.S. And they developed actually a full electric powertrain that they were trying to sell to existing automakers trying to go electric. But SF Motors instead snapped them up for a few millions, I think, a few tens of millions. Mm-hmm. And they incorporated their technology into the vehicles that they want to launch. And this week, they unveiled the first two vehicles. But I think the way they talked about it, there's only one that's meant for production right now. So it's the SF5 and SF7. And unfortunately, the SF7 is the one that looks super cool. But it's the SF5 that is going to production. And apparently, it's going to production as soon as next year. Of course, we heard that from other electric startup before. We're looking at you, Faraday Future. We're looking at you, Lucid Motors, which are both still saying that they're launching cars this year, but we never know.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of frustrating is like this fits the mold of like another like Chinese company building cars in the U.S. and you know. Like,
but where they have a big difference, I think, with SF Motors and those two other companies that we just mentioned, is that those two other companies, the first thing they did was marketing and launching their concept cars and pushing the concept cars hard. And look at what we build. It's so cool. It's so powerful. It beats Tesla in every way and blah, 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 blah. Instead, the way we first heard about SF Motors or their effort to bring something to market. So they focused on the manufacturing part. They already bought a plant, and it's a plant that was, as of quite recently, already producing electric vehicle. Not electric vehicles, excuse me.
Hummers. Hummers.
They were producing cars. While both Lucid and Faraday Future, the first thing that they did, they said they were going to build their own factory from the ground up and billion-dollar factories each. So in that sense, SF Motor is a lot closer to Tesla, which, of course, ended up buying the NUMMI plant in Fremont from Toyota. That was a plant that was recently producing vehicles, too. And that was a big advantage for Tesla to bring the Model S to market. So there's some similarities at that. There's some links there. But, going back to those vehicles that they're showing here today, talking about the premium vehicles. So they haven't talked about pricing, unfortunately, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's anything below $60,000 or anything like that. I think it's going to be over $60,000. And so some spec, different motor configuration from 2 to 4 motors, up to 1,000 horsepower. They talked about range.
1,000 horsepower would be pretty big.
Yeah. And that was for the SF. Well, so they were sort of a mid-sized SUV, mid-sized SUV crossover. Tough to describe the car. You can look at the link on the track, but let's say like mid-sized SUV. It's pretty powerful for sure, from 100 kilowatts to 400 kilowatts, depending on. So it's 100 kilowatts per motor, basically. No, so you can have a single motor. So if it's a single motor, you can probably get a cheaper version of the car. In terms of range, they haven't talked about the battery pack capacity, but they said that they were aiming for more than 300 miles EPA rated, 500 kilometers NEDC. They haven't got the memo that no one is using NEDC anymore. But the focus on the presentation this week was also on their manufacturing capacities. So they presented themselves as sort of a global company. So they have the plant in Indiana, like you said, but they also have another plant in China, based at the SoCon headquartered. They have like a big SoCon campus. SoCon just makes a ton of stuff, so they have a lot of resources in China. I think they're going to be pretty serious in the space.
Good. I welcome their entry into the electric EV marketplace. I don't think Faraday Future or Lucid are really helping out at this point. They're kind of being the Solyndra of cars that people point to and say, yeah, hey, see, EVs don't work.
Fisker was already the Solyndra of EVs. So you can see they're the new Fiskers then.
Right.
No, we're not being fair. I mean, they're not dead yet. Fisker did die and now he's reborn. And I think Fisker is going to... Not the Karma, but the Fisker, the new Fisker from Henrik Fisker. Apparently, he's going to have some news this week, next week. I'm going to look into that. But
it's going to be a 4,000 kilowatt car, and it's going to have solid state batteries that'll last a month of driving.
Yeah, and it's going to be out tomorrow.
Right.
And you're going to have the same technology in your phone the next day, and all those nice promises that Henrik Fisker's like to do. But he does build pretty stunning vehicles.
Pretty cars.
So we always like to look at them. I don't know if I would put my money into one of them, but we're going to hear how he's going to say. But other than that, that's pretty much it for this week's episode, guys. So thanks a lot for listening and watching on YouTube and all your podcast app. We want to thank some sponsors, as usual, Wonder Capital, sponsoring this week's episode. Thanks a lot. You can always go to wondercapital.com/electric for checking out their offering in terms of solar investment. Also, a big thanks to our Patreon supporters. Now over close to 230 of you are supporting us on Patreon for the podcast and the website, which is a big, big help.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks a lot. And we're going to see you next week. Seth's going to be back in New York. I'm going to be in Montreal as usual.